May only the truth be spoken and only the truth be heard. In the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, Spirit of life. Amen. Imagine. Apparently, it was inspired by a poem that Yoko Ono wrote and a Christian prayer book that had been given to Lennon as a gift. It invites us to dream of what we could be if only we would let go. Let go of the borders, boundaries, and beliefs that divide us. It ends with hope that someday the world will be as one. It was released in 71 and topped the charts again in 1975 after its global release. I vaguely remember it playing on the radio endlessly. I was 10, so it didn't mean much to me at the time, but as I look back at what was going on in my life, and as I consider what's going on in all of our lives right now, imagine means a whole lot more. Here's the story. When I was 10, we had just moved from London to a small village in southwestern Ontario. I had left my friends behind. There were no kids in my new neighborhood. It was as though my whole world changed. And as the summer wore on, I felt more alone than I ever had in my life. And that is when I began to imagine. Across the street from my house was this massive cornfield. It was used as feed for the nearby turkey farm. And since I was a big fan of Hogan's Heroes, for anyone who remembers that, I imagined that cornfield was the underground of the POW camp in which I was imprisoned. I was Colonel Mackeson, and I was going to liberate myself and my comrades by tunneling out of that prison. So every day I would cross the street and trample down corn stalks, making this vast maze in the cornfield, but pretending that I was making my way toward freedom. But you know, like most childhood games, that kind of imagining lost its shine after a time. Sure, it was fun to pretend, but fancy gets to be pretty thin gruel. And I began to hunger for something real. So I gave up the game. I stopped looking at the cornfield as an escape, and instead of walking the maze, I set out to find the other side of that cornfield, to see what was beyond. The next day, I reached the other side, parted the corn stalks, to discover a neighborhood I didn't know existed. There was a playground within spitting distance from where I was, and there, playing on the monkey bars, were three boys my age, Greg Gillum, Mark Jones, and Rick McIntosh. Of course I remember their names, because, you know, those kids soon became my best friends in that Rob Reiner-esque Stand By Me time of my life. What's the moral of the story? When we feel alone, overwhelmed by circumstances beyond our control, there comes a time when we need to stop pretending and begin to imagine. Instead of remaining in the prisons we create for ourselves, instead of making mazes in our minds to distract us from what's going on in our lives and in the world, we need to discover what's on the other side. The other side of our despair, the other side of this crisis that holds all of us captive at this time. We need to imagine what God is calling us to be as we begin to break through the bonds of this pandemic, finally. I imagine that is just where the disciples are in today's gospel. The reading doesn't make it clear, but Jesus and his disciples are traveling through Galilee on their way to Jerusalem. And that means the end is near. Jesus knows what awaits him when they reach the holy city, and he's trying to prepare the disciples, telling them over and over again that he will be killed and rise again. The disciples don't understand what Jesus means when he speaks of rising again, probably. But they certainly know what it means for Jesus to die. In fact, in the passage just before this, Peter is rebuked for telling Jesus that the Messiah must not allow himself to be killed. And today, it seems that now, finally, the disciples are starting to believe it. Because as they're walking along, they begin arguing with one another about who among them is the greatest. Now, many scholars see this as a sign that the disciples are full of selfish ambition, the kind we're warned against in this morning reading from the letter of James. But I don't think the disciples are motivated by ambition. I imagine that for the last few weeks, as they were told over and over again that Jesus was going to die, I imagine they just pretended it wasn't happening. They built their own mazes in the cornfield to avoid the fear and pain of the loneliness they knew they would have to face. But in today's gospel, they stop pretending and begin to imagine. To imagine what it's going to be like when Jesus is gone and they are forced to carry on. I imagine that when they argue about who's the greatest, they're making a succession plan. Look, if Jesus is going to die, then we need to figure out who among us is the one best fit to carry on. So where does that leave us? We Latter-day disciples who are no less called to carry on, who have faced our own loneliness, fear, and uncertainty these last 18 months. As we regather today, as we begin to step out of the maze of this pandemic, and see what's on the other side. What is our succession plan? Well, we know this. We are not the first disciples, wondering what it's going to look like on the other side. We have seen the resurrection. and we live the life of the redeemed, even in the midst of this pandemic. And despite our fear or isolation or sense of helplessness, we are not lonely children constructing mazes in cornfields, pretending we're something we're not, to take our minds off our own misgivings, or languishing in despair over what is really going on in the world. We are children of God. And we are called to bend our imagination towards hope, listening intently to where God is calling us through the clamor of this global crisis. We are called not to squabble about who is the greatest, or bask in the wonderful things we do that make us swell with pride. Rather, we are to embrace the world that is emerging as we would a child. That's where the gospel ends. Now, it's tempting to sentimentalize the tale of today's gospel and say that if we just loved one another the way that we love our children, we would melt God's heart and the world will be as one. Instead, Jesus is calling us to something deeper, more difficult, but more rewarding. We are to embrace those whom the world rejects, neglects, and ignores. We are to struggle for and on behalf of those who, like children in Jesus' time, have only the smallest voice on the world stage. Think what that looks like for Black Lives Matter, Indigenous justice, whose voices are only beginning to be heard. Or think what that looks like for creation itself, whose cries for help still fall on deaf ears. Yes, it is a daunting call. But like Lenin's imaginings, in the end, there is hope. For as we say every time we gather, God's power working in us can do infinitely more than we can ask or imagine. Yes, it's a tall order. And you may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one, am I? Amen.